We'll call this meeting to order and begin with a formal roll call. Do we need that?
Yeah, we do. Thank you. Representative, excuse me, Senator Poolman?
Here.
Pilser?
Here.
And Sinner?
Here.
And then Representatives Kaiser?
Here.
Ammerman?
Here.
And Ruby? Okay, we do have a quorum this morning.
Thank you. All right, our main task today is to take a look at three different bill drafts that we have before us today. Why don't we begin? Jennifer, do you want to walk us through the first two? And then maybe we'll ask Senator Sinner to walk us through his and explain the differences between the three bills.
You bet. Thank you. If you've been checking your email, you saw that we have two bill drafts that are numbered 298. We've got versions 1 and 2. And I noticed that I've got versions 1, or I've only got version 2. Thank you. They are identical, except for one provision was added in version 2. If it's okay, what I'd like to do is go through one first and then point out the additional language in the second version. Version 1 has a lot of housekeeping changes, and I'll walk through them really quickly just so just so we've recognized them. I want to bring to your attention that there are three sections in this bill draft. Two of them are amending existing law, and the third one's an application clause. Let's talk about the application clause first. All the changes we're making in our statutes here would apply to appeal decisions that take place on or after the effective date of this act. So if we've got something in motion and the decision comes down on or after the effective date of this act, it would be covered by these provisions. The two bodies of law that we have here, the first one relates to administrative appeals. The second section is the body of law that relates to our judicial appeals, so our district court and our Supreme Court. As a matter of style, what I've done here is I've tried to take away most of the substance from that judicial appeal language and pull it into this, to the administrative piece, so that we're consistent all the way through. And if over time one body of law changes, we don't have the concern of forgetting to change it in the other body of law. So we're kind of bootstrapping the judicial appeal language into the administrative so we can deal with it all in one place. I think this, so the beef of what we're doing is in section one. That's where we're putting all of our substantive changes. I think that the existing law 650208 is probably a creation of amendments over time. And so we're trying to clean it up a little bit, update it a little bit, and that's why it looks like we're making so many substantive changes and we're not really. One of the things we're doing is we're putting it into subsections. This body of law relates to fees that the organization, that WSI, can pay. Well, they can pay more than just attorney's fees. What we're dealing with here is attorney's fees and costs. That's the only substantive change we're making. But we're trying to set this section of law up by subsections so each one relates to a different dynamic of fees. The attorney's fees that we're dealing with are all going to be in subsection 3, which are going to be on page 2. You see that we've got that subsection 3. We've created subdivisions A through E, E, F, A through H. That subsection 3, that's where we're dealing with all our attorney's fees. Everything we're doing before that is housekeeping. You see that on page 1, lines 13 through 17, we're overstriking that language. The reason we're taking it out of there, it relates to attorney's fees, is we're moving it over to subsection 3. There's a change that we're making at the bottom of page 1 where we're overstriking language saying the organization shall pay an injured employee's attorney's fees and costs from the organization's general fund. We're pulling that over into subsection 3.2, so you'll see it again. there's one more area in, let's see, I think in sub three that I want to draw your attention to that is not intended to be substantive, but I think I'm going to defer to WSI to talk a little bit about it. If you go down to the bottom of page two on sub F, it starts out, this subsection does not prevent an injured employee or an employer from hiring or paying an attorney. But then we strike out, however, the employee's attorney may not seek or obtain costs or attorney's fees from both the organization and the employee relative to the same claim. That would be a substantive change by overstriking that. However, the reason we're taking it out is WSI reports to me that years ago there was a Supreme Court case that addressed this issue and essentially made this language, I'm not calling it obsolete, but inappropriate. I will defer to them to talk about how that the history of that played out, but I think in practice it is not substantive. It's a housekeeping measure to keep our statutes up to date with constitutional law laid down by the Supreme Court. But it sure looks substantive if you don't have the background of the Supreme Court cases. I want to bring your attention to the substantive changes we are making here. We are pulling in references to the judicial court appeals. Remember, we're doing that because we're trying to address everything in this one section here. So although that is substantive, I'm not going to really focus on that. What I want to focus on is the whole reason we have this bill draft, and that was to address the situation where an injured worker is prevails on an appeal, but then due to additional additional actions on that claim, ultimately does not prevail. We're not going to penalize that injured employee for additional actions. If I understood the rationale of the committee at the previous meeting, it was recognition that prior to the changes in the attorney's fees law, there were significant numbers of appeals taking place because the state would pay for every level of appeal regardless. So the pendulum swung back a little bit and to try to close down on that. This is probably, if this went through, this would probably be an adjustment on that to say, if that injured worker did prevail on appeal, it does recognize that there was substance and it wasn't frivolous. A reasoning legal mind would have found that there was substance to this. And for that reason, there may be a basis for paying for the attorney's fees. The place we address that is on page two, that new subdivision C, where we say the organization shall pay an attorney's fees and costs if the injured employee prevailed in binding dispute resolution under under this existing law. Then we go on to say if they prevail on an administrative hearing, and then we pull in that language about judicial, or if they prevail at the district or Supreme Court level. We go on to say the organization shall pay the attorney's fees and costs at the time the injured employee prevails. That's recognition of it doesn't really matter what happens after they prevail. If they prevailed at one level, it's appropriate for the organization to pay them. And then that next sentence furthers that and says, the organization may not condition payment of attorney's fees and costs upon the injured employee prevailing upon any future appeal. So that's the beef of what we're doing here. We've got a little bit of tweaking here. We need to recognize that when we talk about how an injured employee prevails, we say they prevail if they receive a benefit, an additional benefit paid. So if they actually receive that additional benefit, then they prevail. Well, if that claim goes on in an appeal, it's possible they never would have actually received that benefit. So we go on in sub E and we say, notwithstanding the requirement that they have to have received a benefit, it's okay. We're going to say they prevailed, even if they didn't get that additional benefit. And I can let you read that. That's sub E. Notwithstanding the requirement under sub D that an additional benefit be paid or received if the organization ultimately prevails in its appeal of an administrative order at district court, that injured employee is eligible for attorney's fees and costs at the level at which Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at Senator Sinners. I thought that's not jiving with the language we have here. So that's on page 2E. Notwithstanding the requirement of sub D that an additional benefit be paid or received, an injured employee who prevails at the administrative or district court level is eligible for attorney's fees and costs for prevailing at that level, regardless of whether the organization ultimately prevails upon the organization's appeal of an administrative or district court order. That language in sub E is trying to say there may be an instance where that injured employee doesn't actually get a dollar amount, doesn't actually get an additional benefit, because the order of events was so quick, went so quickly, or the decision was never implemented because the organization ultimately appealed and prevailed. So that's the substance of what you're doing. The rest that we've gotten sub one are housekeeping in nature, other than that one section on F that I talked about the North Dakota Supreme Court. And like I said, I'll let WFI talk about that. We've got that section two, which is good for you to know that it's there. You can see that we're overstriking a lot of that language. The rationale for that is we're pulling it over into section one of the bill draft. Otherwise, we're not doing anything substantive in section two. It's all a matter of let's only say it once and let's say it in section one of the bill draft. So that's what you've got. That's what you've got in one. Now, there's one change that we make here in the second version of this. Madam Chairman, would you let me to pause here for questions, or should we go through right away and talk about two?
Let's pause for one question, because I think Representative Kaiser has one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jennifer, on page two, mm-hmm. on the subsection E, what happens if I go to the Supreme Court and win? We don't know in terms of this benefit and the attorney's fees.
Madam Chairman, Representative Kaiser, under existing law, my understanding is, let's say you prevailed at the administrative level.
No, let's say I fail at one of those levels.
But you worked your way all the way
court
through.
And I lose, but I go to the Supreme Court and they reverse it. Why wouldn't my fees be paid?
Madam Chairman, Representative Kaiser, I think under today's system they would, and I'm looking at WSI
for
verification.
But this language says differently.
And I think under this one they would as well, but tell me.
Well, as I read it, it says that additional benefit paid or received, an injured employee who prevails at the administrative or district court level is eligible for attorney fees. What about Supreme Court level?
I think what it is the lead-in language there is notwithstanding the requirement that you actually get an additional benefit payable. So this is only applicable if we're trying to create an exception. There are going to be some situations where you didn't get an additional benefit. If you got an additional benefit, you never even have to get to this discussion of E.
Right.
This other law above it will help you, and that'll get your attorney's fee paid.
But again, this is, as I read it, it's addressing the paying of the attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that we're missing the payment to the Supreme Court level, because this doesn't allow it. It will pay attorney's fees only at the administrative law judge and the district court level.
Well, if we go up to Madam Chairman, Representative Kaiser, if we go up to sub C, it says the organization shall pay an attorney's fees or costs if the injured employee prevailed at the district or Supreme Court.
Right. Then why do we need this language in E? Or what's it doing different than that?
If we had a situation where the injured employee prevailed at the district court level, but the organization appealed and prevailed to the Supreme Court, there may be a situation where that injured employee, although they prevailed at the district court level, they never actually received an additional benefit. They had an order that said they should, but they never actually did. That's what E is trying to address, is that small possibility.
So they will get the benefit?
Where they never actually got the, it. My understanding is it could happen. It could happen where there was a decision at a lower level, and it was in the injured employee's benefit. You know, they prevailed. but it, that order is stayed and they never actually get the benefit because the organization's appealing on. So even though
with that, that's the only difference in the second draft, and so maybe now would be a good time for someone from Workforce Safety and Insurance to come up and discuss the bills and answer our questions, talk a little bit about what they wanted added in that second draft and why, and then just answer our general questions as we go. Thank you.
Good morning. Ann Green with Workforce Safety and Insurance. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you guys have.
Senator Kilzer.
Well, Madam Chairman and Ms. Green, I have some questions about the origins of the fee schedule that is used by the agency or the organization. I don't know what we should call you. I've heard both terms this morning, but there seems to be a terrible problem with access to legal services for injured workers, and it's been present for a long time, and not very much has been done about it. Actually, the situation parallels the payment system for Medicaid and medical providers in that division of human services. I don't know what the answer is, but putting further impositions on fee schedules, I don't see that as any kind of a solution to the access problem. So I'd like a little explanation of how this administrative rule came into being and why it's continuing to cause the problem of access.
Madam Chairman, Representative Kilzer, the administrative rule predates me in terms of my tenure with the agency. I can tell you that based on the administrative rule, it was effective June 1 of 1990. Its origins, Senator, I can't speak to because I don't know. I can tell you that during my tenure with the agency, which has been about 17 years, that typically the administrative rule is amended, usually commensurate with the legislative session, and we usually kind of go through the rules looking at what things need to be changed. In terms of the attorney fee rule, what we generally do is take what WSI has paid its outside counsel, those firms that we hire to defend the agency's position. We try to get an average cost per hearing that we pay our outside counsel, and then amend the rules so that we are in line in terms of what we pay claimants' counsel, that it's so that it's commensurate with what we're paying our outside counsel as an average. Have I answered your question?
Well, to some degree, yes. Do you do what we call rebasing in the medical field? You know, the Department of Human Services goes through and rebases their nursing home payments, their medical payments, their chiropractic, their ambulance ambulance services. These are based upon some formula that has factors in that formula that are based upon the actual costs of the service. Do you do anything like that?
Madam Chairman and Senator Kilzer, I can't speak exactly to what rebasing is. I'm not sure that I fully understand that concept. I can tell you that if rebasing is taking what's going on in the industry and reformulating what an insurer or Medicaid or Medicare would pay a provider by taking data in the industry, we take the best data that we have, which is what WSI is paying its outside counsel, what we're paying to defend our position or an employer's position on an individual account, and then trying to fashion that administrative rule so that there's an equity in terms of what we're paying outside counsel, and making that equitable to what we're paying claimants counsel. So if I understand rebasing as you're explaining it, the answer is yes.
Okay. Do bill charges have any weight at all with the amount of reimbursement that you give to attorneys?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Kilzer, do you mean the bill that comes in from outside counsel?
Yes.
There is a provision, Madam Chairperson and Senator Kilzer, by which an attorney, and I believe it's in 6510, where an attorney, an outside attorney, can present to the organization. It actually is in draft. If you want to reference it, it's in the second draft, page 3, line 22. The maximum fee set by the organization may be exceeded upon application of the injured worker or injured worker's attorney to the organization upon finding that a claim has a clear and substantial merit and that the legal or factual issues involved in the appeal were unusually complex.
And of course, who decides whether or not it's an unusual case?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Kilzer, the agency.
Okay.
And Ms. Green, I just wanted to double check. You said that you go through the administrative rule process, so that happens every 2 years, that you look at the cost and you update that every 2 years?
Madam Chairperson,
session.
Generally, yes.
Thank you. Representative Kaiser.
Madam Chair, and Ann, two questions. How often, percentage-wise, if you can give it to us, because I know there aren't many cases that are appealed and where the claimant is, your decision is reversed or changed, modified in some way. What percent of the cases that are going through the legal process now get reversed, the decision gets some reversal, and you appeal it to a higher court? That's the first question.
Madam Chairperson, Representative Kaiser, very, very few. I can't give you the number.
But even if they're few, do you automatically appeal them and take them to the next level?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
The appeals that we take are very, very few. Generally, we rely on the finder of fact, which is the administrative law judge.
The second question, if I may continue, Madam Chair, what is the current rate structure for payment to attorneys, given the current rule? And would you just walk through your proposed additional amendment, what it would do to that overall rate structure as the claimant would go through the process?
Yes. I'm going to reference administrative rule. It is 9201.02.11.1. It's our attorney fee administrative rule. And so an injured worker's attorney is entitled to the payment of attorney fees if he or she prevails at the following rates. If an injured worker attorney prevails at the administrative hearing level, they are entitled to attorney fees at the cap of $5,775. If they appeal at the district court level, they are entitled to attorney fees in the amount of $8,600. And if they appeal to the Supreme Court and prevail, they are entitled to a cap of $10,300. So the clarification that WSI has proposed in draft 2 is only to clarify and codify what our current practice is, which is if you, under the proposed new law, were to recover $5,775 at the administrative hearing level, and then we were to go on to district court and prevail again, that cap of $8,600 doesn't apply anew. Rather, injured worker's attorney would be entitled to the difference between $8,600 and $5,775. Similarly, if injured worker's attorney were to appeal to the Supreme Court and be entitled to $10,300, but had only prevailed, let's say, at the administrative hearing level, they would be entitled to attorney fees in the amount of the difference between $10,300 and $5,775.
So let me just clarify to make sure I understand. If I lose an administrative hearing and I appeal to district court, I don't get the full $8,600. I only get...
No.
Just the reverse. If I win and then I lose.
You would win. If you appealed to the district court, even if you lost at the ALJ level and you won at district court, you would be paid $8,600.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Kaiser.
Madam Chair, and I'm just asking this question because I'm not an attorney and I don't know attorney's fee. Is that reasonable? Is this a reasonable strategy? I mean, if I win at district court, you appeal it, and I have to go to the Supreme Court, my attorney is going to get, as I understand it, an additional $1,700. Is that what it costs for me to go to the Supreme Court as an attorney? Because I'm going to get the $8,600 because I won at the two lower levels.
Madam Chairperson and Representative Kaiser, given the fact that the heavy lifting, so to speak, has happened at the administrative hearing level, the depositions, the gathering of discovery, the examining of witnesses, the writing of pre-hearing and post-hearing briefs, given that the heavy lifting has happened at that level and what we've taken up at the district court level and at the Supreme Court level is a record, a created record, I think, and it's, that's my opinion based on my experience in looking at attorney fees, is that that is reasonable.
Senator Kilzer?
Madam Chairman and Ms. Green, so how specifically were these numbers arrived at? I know you described the amount of work that goes into the getting ready for the case and going through the prosecution and everything. Is there a formula that is used, and who was the person or the organization that said these are the appropriate levels? Because I'm still concerned about access. Injured workers are telling me all the time and have for years that they can't find an attorney to represent them. Of course, there are some cases where the attorney will say, well, this is a losing case, I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But there are some that have merit and should be given the opportunity to be judged. Where do these figures come from?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Kilzer, as I indicated, those fee caps come from an average of what we pay our outside counsel. That process is initiated internally at WSI. I participate in that process because part of my job as the director of the legal division is to evaluate bills, evaluate what we're paying our outside counsel, renegotiate or negotiate contracts with outside counsel, determine what we pay them hourly, and then basically keep an eye on and monitor what's going out the door in terms of dollars paid. And so once it gets to administrative rule time, we'll take a look at what we've paid outside counsel, what we've paid claimants counsel, and check for equity, look for equity. Those numbers then are reviewed with the executive level at the organization. We provide our justification for raising the caps, raising the hourly rate that we pay claimants counsel. That's typically signed off on, and then we go through the administrative rules process, which of course has the ability to provide comment and attend a hearing. In terms of access, I agree with you. I think that there is There is a limited bar of attorneys in North Dakota who practice workers' compensation work. And we acknowledge that. I acknowledge that. We see that. I see that in the monthly billings. I see the same number of attorneys every month. I think that the proposed legislation before this committee will provide an incentive to claimants' counsel to take an opportunity to appeal a file. They won't have to worry about not getting paid until, let's say, the appeal process has run out. They, upon prevailing, will be paid under this legislation at the time that they prevail. I think from a numbers perspective at WSI, we will see an increase in litigation.
I got some questions too, Madam Chair.
Senator Sinner, I'm just going to let Senator Kilzer continue here for just one moment.
So do you think the reluctance of attorneys to help the injured workers is not based upon compensation, but it's based upon some other factor? I think we have plenty of attorneys in the state, but so I don't think it's a lack of number of attorneys. What other factors might be contributing to this reluctance?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Kilzer, it would be speculative for me to determine or to speculate on why attorneys don't choose this as an area of practice. Could fees be a potential issue? Sure, they could. Could it be that workers' comp is a real specialized, statutorily driven area of law, that it's fairly complex? It could be that. I don't know. I don't know, sir.
So do you think it's possibly that the deck is stacked against the clientele?
Madam Chairperson, Senator Kilzer, I don't know.
Okay, that's fine.
Thanks. And Ms. Green, I just have one question. I would echo exactly what Senator Kilzer had talked about, because all of the people who came to us said it's so difficult to find anyone who will take my case. And so that's really what we're trying to address with this bill. And my question is relating to the process of deciding the rates, the hourly rates, and you use WSI's numbers based on what you pay outside counsel. Is there any possibility that because you have outside counsel that handles so many cases for WSI that you might be seeing a lower rate or a discounted rate because of the sheer number of cases that they're working and their familiarity with that? Could your numbers be lower because of the expertise and the bulk of cases than, say, an attorney who's just practicing here in Bismarck?
Madam Chairperson, yes, I think that's a possibility.
Senator Sinner?
Yes, I've got a couple questions too. And thanks so much for being there and being able to answer questions. When WSI does agree to pay fees under or costs under these cap, does that include all of the fees that an attorney might charge?
Madam Chairperson, Senator Sinner, I'm not sure that I understand your question. We pay.
Well, let's just say, you've got an injured worker that lives in Missoula, Montana, and hires an attorney from Missoula, Montana, who hires an attorney from Bismarck to help with this case if they can find one, and eventually the case goes before the district court and they have to appear, and everybody has to come to appear before the court, and the legal counsel then from Montana comes, and so they appeal to the district court, and they get $8,600, and that includes all of their costs, travel costs, everything that's paid. Is that the way it works?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Sinner, no, we pay, in your hypothetical for a district court appeal, we would pay the $8,600 in fees, plus we would also pay costs subject to our administrative rule.
And so, to follow up, Madam Chair, those costs are based on state rates? Are they meal costs? Are they everything? How does that work?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Sinner, I'm looking at the administrative rules. Mileage and other expenses are paid pursuant to Title 44 and 54 regarding out-of-state travel expenses. We pay attorneys travel rate under a separate section of the administrative code at 50% of the hourly rate. Additionally, we pay other costs, including postage, toll charges, long distance telephone calls, copying charges, and other, there's a catch-all phrase, or there's a catch-all clause as well in the administrative rule.
One other question is, do you recall the highest rate you've ever paid for outside counsel, for WSI's counsel, outside counsel? Do you remember that? Have you hired, say, for example, Minneapolis attorneys and paid $350, $400 an hour, and that figures into the average?
Madam Chairperson, Senator Sinner, there are situations where we will contract with outside counsel if there is an issue that needs to be defended outside of the state. And
so the plaintiff's counsel gets the average, and your outside counsel could get 3-4 times the average, correct?
Madam Chairperson, Senator Sinner, no, I disagree with that.
What would they get?
Madam Chairperson, Senator Sinner, outside counsel would, depending on the case that's before or that they're defending us for, would be the fee would generally, if it's our outside counsel handling claims litigation, would receive the rate that they have been contracted for. That rate is similar, very commensurate with the administrative rule rate for claimants' counsel.
No, I'm a little confused. Didn't you just say that there are specific times when you hire outside counsel at a much higher rate?
Madam Chairperson, Senator Sinner, there are situations in which we have hired counsel at a higher rate. That number is not used. I'll exclude those pieces of litigation where we have specifically hired an outside attorney for a specific task. Those dollars I'll take out of the average before averaging the amounts that we would use as the basis for formulating the hourly rate for claimants' counsel in the administrative rule. Perhaps we should put them in. It might lend to a higher average.
Well, I think based on everything we've heard today, injured workers are having a hard time getting legal counsel. And based on the discussion that I've had with legal counsel, when they do get paid, the price is far less than what they normally charge. And part of the reason I think that the agency can get outside counsel at a lower rate is you've got a whole group of people doing research for your people, for the counsel you hire. The outside counsel, for an injured worker hires a counsel, they got to do all this research on their own. And I think it stacks the deck totally on behalf of the agency when going into these cases where an outside counsel, a claimant has a counsel, and where even the agency hires outside counsel. Would you agree with that?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Sinner, No, I don't agree with that. claimants counsel that's currently practicing in the state are seasoned attorneys. There are, you know, I can count them on one hand, and they've been at this work for 15, 20 years. One that comes to mind used to work for the agency. So the counsel that's practicing work comp in the state are seasoned attorneys who understand these issues. So the notion that WSI or outside counsel has a fleet of worker bees ferreting out legal issues where outside claimants counsel doesn't have that same advantage is just not accurate. Issues in work comp litigation repeat themselves. Certainly there's novel things that come up, but as a general matter, once you understand work comp law, the issues are repetitive.
I think we're going to disagree on that issue, but that's all right. I think we all agree that injured workers are struggling to get legal counsel. I think you just stated that you could count legal counsel that are taking injured worker cases in North Dakota on one hand. I think that speaks to this issue, and I think the fact that you are hiring outside counsel at a much higher rate speaks to this issue as well. And I think we need to, committee reviewing this process, I think it's something that we have to look at. And which takes me, honestly, to the bill that I proposed, and you've maybe seen the bill by now, but it also says that if the agency appeals a previous court decision where the injured worker prevailed, that the agency will cover the costs of the injured worker's attorneys, win or lose. And that's what I think another way that we could help these people. If they have prevailed in a administrative law judge or a district court, if they have prevailed and the agency decides to appeal, there's no way that injured worker can afford not to fight for his case. And I think the agency should pay those attorney's costs in the cases where they choose to appeal. And I'd like to hear the committee discussion on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Sinner. And that would bring me back to a question we asked earlier. Actually, Representative Kaiser asked it right out of the gate about the number of cases where the injured worker wins and WSI appeals after that. And you said it was very rare. Can you think of, let's just say in the past year, how many times has that happened where WSI has said, we lost, but we're going on, we're going to appeal?
Madam Chairperson, between 5 and 10.
Out of how many cases?
We have about 300 cases that are heard at the administrative hearing level every year. That's approximate.
Thank you. But, Representative Kaiser.
But Ann, that's the point. It's not that they're heard. 300 isn't a large number, and the administrative law judge is going to rule, I assume, frequently with WSI. So not that number, but how many cases at the administrative law judge does the claimant win that you then have to proceed?
Madam Chairperson, Representative Kaiser, we have about a 65% prevail rate. Between 65 and 67% at the administrative law judge
so
level.
If we took 30% of
my math is not good, Representative Kaiser.
90?
I'm sorry,
that'd
sir.
Be about 90.
Yep, cases. About right.
That would be affected by this change.
Potentially, yes, sir.
And that's about 10% of the cases then. And so the fiscal impact would be fairly low. Correct? If Senator Sinner's bill were implemented, we're only talking about 5 to 10 cases a year where you would then be covering the costs.
Madam Chairperson, under the current law, yes. However, if we incentivize an appeal because there is no risk, I think we would see a far greater fiscal impact.
Wait a minute.
But he's talking about when workers' compensation decides to appeal.
When WSI appeals.
When WSI appeals, not when an injured worker appeals. This is only when WSI appeals. So you're telling me.
I apologize. I just got a copy of the bill and haven't had an opportunity to review it.
That's okay. So you're telling me that WSI only appeals 5 to 10 times in a year.
Correct.
And so the impact would probably be not that great in terms of covering their attorney's fees. If you're deciding we are going to appeal, we're going to pay your fees until we get our final ruling. Okay. Any questions for Senator Sinner on his bill?
Madam Chair.
Representative Ammerman?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just have one question for Ann. Do you have a list of your outside sources that you use that could be given to the committee? Is that possible?
Madam Chairperson, Representative Ammerman, by sources, do you mean a list of our outside counsel?
Yes.
Yes, yes, sir. I can provide that.
Thank you.
Well, one thing I think we can all agree upon is that we are concerned about access to attorneys for injured workers and concerned a little bit about the fee scale and how that is determined by WSI and administrative rule. And so I think it's something that we can certainly look at incorporating into our next performance evaluation of WSI so that we can take a look at how that number is derived and maybe take a look at the process that we go through. But our bills before us today don't really address any of that. We just have three bills before us, and so I would like to know what the committee's wishes are in relation to any of these bills, any of these versions. Does the committee have any wishes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the approval of the bill that I have there, which is version 17.0303.01000.
It's been moved by Senator Sinner. Do we have a second?
Second.
Moved by Senator Sinner, seconded by Representative Ammerman to approve, or are we giving a favorable recommendation? Is that how we work this?
Would you like to approve and recommend to legislative management? Is this your final answer?
That is their motion.
That is his motion, yes.
So the motion I have is to approve and recommend to legislative management.
Senator Sinner, say yes.
Yes.
Been moved by Senator Sinner, seconded by Representative Ammerman to approve and recommend to legislative council. And this is the third draft we have, Senator Sinner's draft, 17.0303.01000. Committee discussion. Representative Kaiser.
Nope. Well, Madam Chairman, I am not going to support this measure. I do think that we need to have some balance in our litigation process. And one of the checks and balances we had, well, first of all, we will, if you've gone through DRO, we'll pay up to $500 to have an attorney look at the case. What we are proposing in the original draft is a significant improvement, I believe, in the process, which is if you go into battle with WSI and you win at the administrative law judge, then we're going to pay that fee, even if we appeal it further. And if you want to proceed, if you have a good case going forward, we'll pay that fee if you prevail at the district court and so on. So I think it's a reasonable step to do that, to simply say if you win at that level and it's further appealed, then you
The following participant has entered the conference.
Automatically get your fees paid. I don't support that. The other issue that I raised, though, I think is a more legitimate issue on the part of claimants, which is if you win at any level, we start paying until it's reversed. That's a very different issue than the legal issue, but these folks need to have relief, and if they have one relief at any level, they should start receiving it, and then if it gets reversed, it changes at that point, and they don't have to pay it back. That's the way the courts work, and it's a benefit we could give to injured workers, so I will oppose the motion.
Representative Kaiser, I would agree with everything you just said, and the first draft is my favorite as well for all of the reasons that you have outlined. Representative Ruby, welcome to the call.
Sorry, I'm apparently a little late.
Just to fill you in, we are taking a look at the three different drafts, and Senator Sinner has just moved his draft, that third draft that you received by email, and we are discussing that right now. Further discussion. Senator Kilzer.
Well, Madam Chairman, I too would like to see this in a stepwise fashion, and therefore I would favor number, I guess I call number one, two, and three. I do favor number one and number one only.
Further discussion?
I don't believe I received that one. I was looking for that this morning because I remember seeing Jennifer's email to look for one.
It went out last night from Senator Sinner.
This went out last night directly from Senator Sinner, if you check your email.
You know what? I might have forgotten to include Dan. I'll send it to him right now.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry about that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Ammerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just because I'm not there, is there any other interested parties sitting in the audience or anything?
That's an excellent question, and I haven't asked anybody to come up yet, so now would be a great time for me to do that. Are there any other interested parties who would like to discuss the bills before us? For those of you on the phone, no one is jumping to the microphone, so we will continue with committee discussion. Any further discussion?
Well, I'll just throw my two cents in there one more time. Here's the situation. We all know that we've got a problem in our state for injured workers finding legal counsel. We all admit that, everybody at the table. We've got an injured worker case here, and this bill addresses it, where he might win at the administrative law judge or the district court level. We all think that those attorney fees should be paid at the point at which they win. The problem becomes if the agency appeals, the agency makes a determination to appeal. You know that injured worker has to move forward, and we just heard from the agency, we're maybe talking about 10 cases a year. We're talking about a maximum payout, if every 10 cases were litigated, $17,000. But if that injured worker loses that case, that $1,700 comes out of his pocket and he's just lost his case. A case that a previous court or judge determined to in his favor. That's why I made this case. If we have a total cost here of $17,000 out of an agency that's got probably $1 billion or more money in reserve, I think we can afford this for these workers, particularly those who lose their cases. If they win, no problem. And obviously some of those 10 cases, the injured worker will probably prevail and get those fees paid automatically. I think we have some concerns here. We do know, we all recognize, everybody in the room, even WSI, that injured workers are having a hard time finding legal counsel in our state. Ann from WSI just testified that she can count them on one hand, the amount of legal counsel that will take cases in North Dakota. I ask you to sincerely think about what I proposed here. If we can't commit $17,000 in 1 year for injured workers at a maximum, I think it says something about who we are. That's my case. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Sinner. Representative Kaiser?
Madam Chair and committee members, and one of the things that it would be great to get data on is a realistic view of how often people can't get attorneys. I'm not an expert. I do think, unfortunately for me sometimes, that more people get referred to me than maybe to any other legislator. I know WSI is sick and tired of seeing me in their offices on cases, but ironically, the last four people that I've worked with within the last 6 months all had attorneys. And so I just don't know if a lot of times people don't get attorneys because they bring their case forward and the attorneys are well founded in the law, and they look at it and say, no, WSI, based on the statute, WSI is correct in their ruling. There is no case here. I'm not taking it. I wish we had an honest measure of that, because there are people who have come to me and said, I can't find an attorney. And when they've explained the case to me and what little I know about WSI law, I said, I think WSI is correct, and I understand why you're not finding an attorney. So I wish we had a measure of that, because my subjective experience is ironic that the last four, the last 3.5 or 4 months, all had attorneys.
We have a motion on the floor. Any further discussion on Senator Sinner's motion? Okay, then we will vote.
Thank you. Senator Pullman?
No.
Hilzer? Sinner?
Aye.
Representative Kaiser?
No.
Ammerman?
Yes.
And Ruby?
No.
Okay, that motion fails.
That motion has failed. Do we have another motion? Senator Kilzer?
Madam Chairman, I recommend that we advance the first proposal, 17.0298.01000.
It's been moved by Senator Kilzer. Is there a second? Is there a second to Senator Kilzer's motion to approve the first draft?
I'll second it.
It's been moved by Senator Kilzer, seconded by Senator Sinner, to approve and put forth for legislative management our first draft. Committee discussion.
Madam Chairman, could I hear from Senator Kilzer why he prefers the first one from the second draft that we received? And I apologize if that was discussed earlier. That's just a quick explanation.
Well, Madam Chairman and Representative Ruby, the difference between the first and second drafts is on page 2, line 8 to 10, the addition of the sentence. Lines 8 through 10, correct. The total amount of attorney's fees paid by the organization may not exceed the fee cap established for the highest appellate level at which the injured employee prevails. To me, that, even though that is what they have in administrative rule at the present time, and that's the way it's done, so there wouldn't really be any change in the in the way it's handled, I don't like the fact that we are just kind of automatically taking an administrative rule and now we're putting it in code. That's a little burr under my saddle that I don't like to see put in this. I think the first version adequately is the first step, and this is kind of a superfluous. Any other questions, Representative Ruby?
No, that answered my question. I had seen the difference there, and that's I wanted to hear that. Generally, I do like, if it's a policy decision, that we spell it out in statute, because the administrative rule can be subject to change, or somebody could put in language, removing any limit that's currently in administrative rule. So I kind of like the fact that we would state that. Now the caps certainly are still going to be an administrative rule, but at least we're acknowledging that they're there. But thank you for the explanation.
Representative Kaiser.
Madam Chair, committee members, I too like version number two. I'm quite the opposite of Senator Kilzer, actually. The administrative rule processing, I've served on that committee too many times. But the reality is administrative rules have the force of law unless the courts reverse it somehow, or I guess that's the only way it gets reversed, basically. And it has a lot of flexibility on major policy issues. I think back, not to digress too far, but the last time Human Services brought forth rules on daycare centers, they had the force of law if they were adopted. And there were a lot of things in there that were very problematic and eventually did get reversed, unfortunately. But the result of putting what the practice is and what the administrative rule is into the code is preferable to me, because it's our job to write the policy, not the agencies through the administrative rule process. And if this is an important policy, we should put it in. Otherwise, in the next round, they can change the administrative rule in a way that we may not support, certainly. And so I support putting it into code.
Senator Kilzer?
Well, Madam Chairman, up to now I've avoided being on the Administrative Rules Committee, but I look upon administrative rules as fleshing out the skeleton that the code has put in place. And I think we're advocating the policy of putting the cart before the horse when we do it this way.
Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Vammerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This might be for Jennifer or WSI. I just want to get it. If we adopt the second bill, we're going to put it in code. As I understand this green issue was talking, they try to be equitable to look at what they're paying for their attorneys and then address the cap issue to be equitable to the claimant's attorneys. Will they still be able to do that? Are we, by putting it in code, are we impeding that structure? Would we have to change code or anything, or would that still prevail? Because attorney costs will keep going up, and WSI can adjust the caps. If we put this language in code, does that stop that from happening? I'm not sure if I'm addressing it right. I hope somebody understands what I'm trying to get at.
If if I understand his question, I think he's asking, can you continue to revise that number every 2 years as you have been doing? I think that's Representative Ammerman's question.
Thank you. That sounds better.
Absolutely. Please.
Hello?
I'm sorry, I didn't have my mic on. But no, to answer your question, Representative Ammerman, this is Jody Bjornson. It would not stop us from altering or modifying those caps in any way. It just would say the total amount paid would not exceed those caps. So we would adjust it in the future, I would expect, as we have in the past. And then also, our administrative rule, our application of our administrative rule right now only provides for paying, as Ms. Green described to you, our current practice. Why we want it in statute is because you're changing the statute law. Okay, so there's an argument that exists then that our application of the administrative rule isn't accurate, because we've changed the statutory law now in the proposed bill. Well, if we don't change or have some sort of provision in the statute, our concern is that when we change the administrative rule, there's an argument that exists that we're exceeding our authority in promulgating those rules because it's not in the statute. And so it isn't in the rule right now as it exists. We want to clarify it to continue our current practice with your new change in the law, if that's the policy choice that you'd like to make. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion on Senator Kilger's motion? Seeing none?
There we go.
Thank you. Okay, this is on the vote for the approval and recommendation of 298.01. Senators Pullman?
Yes.
Kilger?
Aye.
Sinner?
Aye.
Representatives Kaiser?
No.
Ammerman?
Aye.
And Ruby?
No.
The motion does pass.
Motion carries. So we will be moving our first draft on to legislative management for their approval. Any further discussion? Thank you to all of the folks from WSI for being here and answering our questions. We really appreciate that. And thank you to all the committee members. We have two final motions. This is our last meeting of the interim, and so there are two final motions we need to make. So the chair would entertain.
This is Jennifer. We have two motions. They can both be made by voice vote. One of them is a motion to prepare the committee report and the bill draft, and the other one is to adjourn sine die.
So moved.
It's been moved by Representative Kaiser and seconded by Senator Kilger to prepare a report for legislative management and to adjourn sine die. All those in favor respond by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay? Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It went past 10, though.